And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Houck.
Hello, everybody. Good afternoon, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, reclaiming that which has always been in you. Now, if you are used to listening to me on Tuesday nights, Eastern Standard Time at 7 o'clock or 4 p.m. Pacific Time, we've moved to a new day and time. We are now on Fridays. Friday afternoons, noon out in the Pacific time, and 3 o'clock Eastern time. So certainly delighted to be with you here, really enjoying this new time slot. Now, for those of you who are new to the program, I would like to say and explain a little bit about how I came up with Reclaiming Authenticity. It was something that I had been kicking around for years at the time, and just it was a theme, it was a subject that it was just something that had always stayed with me. And I am a firm believer, first of all, that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything that we need in life. And I truly believe that. I recognize that in myself even as a young boy. And when we think about everything that we have within us, it's going to bring us to our giftedness, as it were, or our skills, or our talents, or our strengths, or our other character traits that we have. But as we go through life and as we experience some very unpleasant things, we may tend to hide our giftedness, or we push that giftedness away, or we say, I don't need those gifts, I don't need that grace, or it just never seems to work out. I just run into more problems after a while, and I'm just going to forget about those things and act as if I never have them. But that giftedness, that uniqueness about us, that hachaitas, this-ness, doesn't go away. Oh, we push it away, we push it down, and so forth, but sooner or later it's going to pop up. It's going to remind us and say, hey, your gifts and your skills and the very good things about you, in fact, the very best of you, is still here. And so we realize that in reclaiming our authentic selves is working through those moments of pain and suffering and those not so pleasant experiences, and rediscovering, often at times, rediscovering and reclaiming the good things, the very best parts of ourselves. And there we eventually are allowed to live out in different relationships just the wonderful expressions of who we are, because we now come from a place of healing and wholeness instead of a place of woundedness. And we really allow our hachaitas, this uniqueness, this-ness about us, to really come out and shine forth. And there's so much more to us than what we have become so far. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about, having the courage to reclaim those things in you. Well, these broadcasts focus on the integration of spirituality and mental health within the context of our relationships. You see, we have a relationship with ourselves every time that we look in the mirror, and we have a relationship with others every time we interact with somebody, and we certainly have a relationship with God or the divine, one who calls us out of ourselves, one who allows us to transcend our limitations and be transformed in that process. And as I said, it is my great pleasure to be with you here today. And as I've always said, my tagline is, how is your heart today? I hope that wherever you are today, you are safe and your heart is filled with peace. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or leave me your comments about today's show, which I'm very excited about, I love this topic, please visit www.bbsradio.com/reclaimingauthenticity. Okay. And if you'd like to be part of the show, please call in. I'd love to just to talk with others, especially on today's subject. But before I get on to today's subject, let me give you that number. The phone number to call in is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls in a little while because I really like to hear from you, because what I'm going to be talking about throughout the month of August, the first 2 weeks, the 7th and the 14th, I'll be talking about after-death communication. And the week of the 21st and the 28th, I will be talking about near-death experiences. So I will be taking your calls, and you'd really like to hear from you, because if you have ever been contacted by a loved one after they had passed, I'd like to know, because perhaps you have experienced after-death communication. Many people report this as being, well, my loved one showed up in a dream, or I had a vision of my loved one. I heard their voice. I smelled their perfume and their cologne. Or perhaps it was through technology, maybe the computer, the phone, or some other means. Or perhaps their favorite animal showed up at that, just at the most, you know, opportune times. Okay, so as I said, I'll be dedicating the month of August to these themes of after-death communication and near-death experiences. Well, I wanted to begin this broadcast by sharing with you how I became involved with after-death communication. You know, this was certainly not a subject that I was taught in school. It never came up in seminary. It, you know, was more or less like on-the-job training, I would say, and I kind of backed into the whole subject. Because early in my career, as I was counseling people, either from the mental health side or as a pastoral professional, I became involved with bereavement counseling, and many people would seek me out to talk about their losses, talk about their loved ones, and talk about things like, I never had a chance to say goodbye to them. I always wanted to say more things to my loved one. Can I do that now? And how am I going to live without them? And one question after another after another. And helping people through their loss and grief issues really seemed to come naturally to me. I grew up experiencing many losses in my life as well. I'd say the earliest loss I experienced was the death of my great-grandmother when I was about 8 years old, 8 or 9, somewhere around there. And it was just something that had always stayed with me in terms of how she affected my life, that first experience being in a funeral home and so forth. And you know, I have to say that even to this day, many, many, many decades later, I have to admit that when I'm either attending a funeral or officiating at one, this is where I feel most at home. Now, that might sound bizarre. I have to admit, that might sound bizarre, but you're also listening to a guy who, when he was a kid, used to run around graveyards on Halloween with his friends. You know, when Linus and Sally were out looking for the great pumpkin, I was playing tag with my friends in the local cemetery. In fact, the best times I remember is when there was a full moon on Halloween, and that made, you know, things pretty interesting back then, but that's for another show, okay? Remind me to go into that story at some point. Well, anyway, all I'm saying is that death and dying was nothing new to me. I felt very comfortable with it, and I've experienced, you know, some mighty powerful losses in my life. However, what was new to me as I began to counsel people and helping them work through their grief and loss issues was the way they shared their stories of how their loved ones started to show up. And I wasn't concerned not so much about the details of their loved ones, you know, coming to them in dreams or visions, but rather I noticed how these appearances would make people feel. As they talked, I watched them and I listened to what they were saying and the words that they said and their emotions with that. And as they shared these stories, I sensed a wave of peace come over them, an assurance, a reassurance that had, like I said, come over them like never before. In fact, they told their stories from a very peaceful place, not, you know, matter-of-factly, but in a way in which they knew their loved one was all right. They knew that their loved one was safe. They knew that their loved one was whole. And this started me thinking. I kept asking questions about myself. It's like, where does this come from? What does this mean? What's the purpose of this? Is this legitimate? How does this help us? How does this hurt us? And so forth. Now, like I mentioned, I had been involved with bereavement counseling early in my mental health work. And as people had shared these stories of loss and grief, they also shared when their loved ones would show up, of course. You know, but again, how they described it was quite fascinating. You know, for example, you know, they would say things like, "Yeah, my grandmother showed up the other night in my dreams and told me I was going to be okay. No big deal. She just waved and then she was gone." Or let's say there were other times when they said, "I was out walking, minding my own business last week, and I smelled my mother's perfume, and I swear she was right beside me." Or still, there's others who would simply just, you know, share their stories of, "You know, I had never seen that animal show up before, but there it was, and it reminded me of my uncle." Or to my wife and I, we are always fond of seeing cardinals show up, bright red cardinals, which always reminds us of the minister's wife who married us many, many years ago. You know, and it's just a gentle reminder of her just popping in to say hello, or "I'm still with you. I'm still connected." And, you know, every now and then, I get the sense that my father-in-law is also with us. I get the sense every now and then that he's showing up in our kitchen dining room area, which, when I think about it, was the very place that he enjoyed hanging out with his family at his home. And I would say that probably the last time I sensed his presence was on a Thanksgiving. I think maybe the first Thanksgiving after he passed, which was several months later. And I was just getting Thanksgiving dinner ready, just, again, minding my own business, just doing my thing, making sure we had everything. And if I needed to run to the store or whatever, and of course, we got to have cranberry sauce. But as I was doing this, I just felt his presence. It's just, he was just walking with me in the kitchen. Sometimes he would be sitting there. Sometimes he would be standing there. I didn't have a clear image or a clear outline of him in front of me, but I felt his presence. In fact, when I felt a presence at that time, I knew it was him. I didn't think, "Well, is that my grandmother or is that, you know, somebody else?" I knew it was him. He didn't say anything to me. I didn't say anything to him at first. I just, after a while, I realized what was going on. And so I just kind of turned in the direction which I thought he was standing. And I just smiled and I just said, "Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving," you know, or something like that. I even forget everything that I said. But it was just a general acknowledgement that I knew, that he knew, that I knew he was there. And that I appreciated it. And then sometime later, I didn't sense his presence anymore. And that was fine, you know. And since that time, I've felt him, you know, other times just showing up. And like I said, it was typically in the kitchen dining room area, which was the place he hung out and drank coffee and always visited with his kids and us whenever we would come up to visit. Well, I have to say that at the outset, I really don't know how after-death communication works. I mean, I don't know if our loved ones have to go up to God and tap God on the shoulder and say, God, is it okay if I just pop down for a little bit? You know, just for a little while. Just how about 5 minutes, okay? And I promise I'll be right back. I'll be right back. And I won't be long, okay? Okay? All right, good. Thanks. I don't think it works that way. But again, who knows? I don't know if they have to get God's permission to pop down or pop in and just hello or wave or we sense their presence. All I know is that people, and it doesn't matter from what culture, background, age, gender, or any of that stuff, everybody experiences these at, say, one time or another. Now, again, I say everybody, but really not everybody experiences an after-death communication. It's something I'll share a little bit later. It's just one of those phenomena in which I think it's very specific at the time. It's very directed. It's very purposeful. Okay, but at any rate, when a loved one passes, we do have this natural urge to stay connected with our loved ones. It's ingrained in us because we realize that a life has been taken from us, or we've been separated, so to speak, from, you know, the physical presence of our loved one. And in earlier bereavement studies that are out there, the advice for the longest time was that for us to get over our losses as quick as possible and to get rid of or donate our loved ones' possessions and move on with our lives and let's start connecting with other people, shall we? Well, the problem with that kind of advice back then was that it really didn't help people grieve. It only taught us to stuff those feelings down and to stuff the relationships down and like, no, we can't talk about that loved one. They're gone. Or we would whisper to one another, you know, well, he died from cancer or something like that, as if it was taboo to talk about a loved one who used to be in our lives. And that's just simply, you know, not the case. It really made matters worse when it came to working through our grief. In fact, it totally ignored the fact that we will always be connected to our loved ones. That's a given. And we will always be connected to them as we're reminded of, you know, birthdays and weddings, funerals, holidays, vacations, and any other day that comes to mind. And whenever this happens, these times are very normal and healthy for us. Even if the memories that we have of our loved ones are not so great or even downright painful. But when this occurs, it reminds us that our grief is very much a process, and it does take time. So I think one of the first things that needs to be cleared up for many people who don't quite understand after-death communication, or they don't know much about it, or they've watched a couple of movies that are similar to this, or they might just flat out fear it because, well, Hollywood's depiction of the dead is nothing to be messed with. But, you know, let's begin with what after-death communication is not. After-death communication is not us trying to make contact with our loved ones or going to the place of their death and calling out, hello, are you there? It has nothing to do with that. And after-death communication is not about us breaking out a Ouija board and contacting our loved ones to get a message about our next big purchase or asking for help, you know, making a decision about whether or not it's the right time for us to get married. And after-death communication is not about attending a seance, you know, to make contact with the other side to see if, shall we say, heaven is for real. You know, those things are not what I'm talking about with after-death communication. But instead, what after-death communication is that our loved ones reach out to us. And there's some pretty strong characteristics that are apparent in everybody's story. You know, after-death communication is universal. Like I said, they occur for anyone, regardless of differences in culture or language or age or gender or whatever. And they're also spontaneous. In fact, you know, they are random. They can occur at any time, whether we are awake, whether we're asleep. But most of the time, after-death communication occurs when we are simply minding our own business. And what I discovered in my own research and curiosity was that after-death communication are multiple. Because most of the time, people receive more than one, you know, such as I had a dream about my loved one, and I had a vision. Or I had a dream about my loved one, and I heard my loved one's voice, or something else. And as I said, this is something that I discovered in my own research with after-death communication and listening to people talk about their experiences. In fact, I years ago, probably back in 2004, I presented a paper about this on the universal, multiple, and spontaneous characteristics of after-death communication. And it was at the International Near-Death Experience Conference at Virginia Beach. And I was given an hour to speak, and so I had to be really concise, really, really, you know, right to the point with everything, because it was a conference, and they lined up many, many, many other speakers. And I remember that the room that I was in, the place was packed, and little did I know that experts in the field of after-death communication and near-death experiences were there. And had I known that ahead of time, I would have been scared out of my mind. But I got there, and I think I had shared like about 10 o'clock in the morning. And I just laid out for everybody what I had found in my research. And, you know, I spoke about how people experienced how loved ones would show up in their dreams. You know, and we all dream about our loved ones. I mean, we all have those kinds of dreams. But in an after-death communication dream, our loved one is real, like really real. Like we could swear they were in the dream and we could reach out and we can touch them. And what they say to us or what they do is very powerful. And we don't forget those dreams. We don't forget the message or anything like that. Even when we wake up, we don't need to write it down because it's very vivid to us. Or, you know, some people get visions that would only last a few seconds and then they're gone. You know, it's not a vision or a trance that a person goes into for several hours. It, at the most, maybe 2, 3, maybe 4 seconds, and then boom, it's gone. But people would swear, literally, that they recognized who they were seeing. They knew immediately, that was my father. No, that was my grandmother, or that was my child. Or, you know, some people, you know, they would hear their loved ones calling their name. Or some, like I said before, sense their loved one's presence through, let's say, a non-indigenous animal that shows up at random. And, you know, where an animal typically doesn't live near you, or an animal that was a favorite of your loved one. I've had people tell me that a peacock showed up the other day and they knew it was, you know, their mother. Because she loved peacocks, and then the peacock would just, you know, drop one of the plumes and then just go on, you know, be on her way. And, you know, they knew that their mother had just shown up just to say, hey, hello, and then she was gone. Okay. Some people report deer showing up, or a particular kind of snake, or even a cougar, or a mountain lion, or something like that, or a particular breed of dog, you know, that was, you know, a favorite of the loved one. And when that dog shows up, it was just the way it acted, or the way it sniffed them, or something, the way it wagged its tail, they knew that, you know, somehow, some way, the loved one was just, you know, checking in, and it's like, hello, you know, I'm good, I'm fine. And then they would never see that type of dog again. So it's that kind of randomness that occurs. And the ones that I really took an interest in, the after-death communication that I really, really became interested, was that how people would hear their loved one's voice, like perhaps through a phone, or when the phone would ring once or twice and they'd pick it up and nobody was there. Or they would hear a voice like, hey, Bob, and then the phone would go dead, or something of that nature. And as one of my favorites all time, you know, people would sense a loved one's presence through smelling their cologne or perfume. In fact, this is how I often sense my own father checking in from time to time. See, back in his day, and we're talking 60s and early 70s, I would say, when the old man thought he was, shall I say, the cat's meow. He liked Old Spice cologne. I mean, who didn't back then? But his cologne of choice was High Karate. And it sounds kind of funny, but, you know, the videos that you can watch on YouTube right now, the commercials that were back in the day, they were pretty cheesy, but they were hilarious. They were funny, you know. But, you know, as a boy, I remember looking at his dresser, and on top of there, besides the Avon decanter colognes that he had, was this bottle of High Karate cologne. And he would splash it on, and, you know, and he would just act like he was the man, you know, like, okay, I am ready. I don't know ready for what, but he, you know, just had that kind of strut about him. Well, according to the commercials, you know, High Karate cologne got its name by, you know, men just splash on High Karate cologne, and when you go outside, you're going to literally have to fight off the ladies. And so, like I said, it was cheesy, but it was just kind of funny. But that was what he wore. And so every now and then, if I'm out somewhere, I would smell High Karate cologne. And I just get the sense of, you know, hey, I'm not too far away here. I'm with you. And when I mean I'm by myself and nobody else is around, it could be in the car. It could be walking somewhere. I'm not in a department store, you know, and nobody walked by me with that cologne on. It's just random. It's just out of the blue. But I know, because I recognize that cologne, you know, that he's around. And I don't know if they sell High Karate cologne in heaven. I don't know. But I do sense his presence, and it always brings me comfort. You know? So I would really love to hear your heart on these matters. So if you would like to call in, I'm going to take a quick break here, but if you would like to call in, the number is 800-627-6008. I'll say that again, 800-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. And again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. And I'll be back in 1 minute. Hey, well, welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, excuse me there, a word about next week's show. We're now moved on to Fridays at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Eastern Standard Time, noon, straight up noon, on Pacific Standard Time. And I'm going to be continuing the entire month and dedicate to the subjects of after-death communication and near-death experience. And so I encourage you that if you've ever had an after-death communication experience, or a time when you experienced your loved one showing up, or on, say, the 21st to the 28th of August, if you'd like to call in and share if you've ever had a near-death experience, we'll be taking a look at that and actually the implications of now what do we do with these experiences. Okay, so I invite you to call in. I would certainly love to hear your story. Well, all in all, people receive more than one after-death communication. And this is something that I found out in my research. It was something that, people would share with me as I was early on, you know, in my practice of just helping them heal from their losses and grief. And they would share their stories about loved ones and then just like, oh, yeah, the other day, you know, my dad showed up, or a child who I lost in childbirth or stillbirth, they were there, or grandma showed up. And they talked very nonchalantly about it. It's just like they were reporting as if it was a matter of fact. And they weren't unnerved by it, although some people do become unnerved by having, you know, these kinds of experiences. You know, that certainly goes without saying, because we're all different. But, most of the time, the majority of the time, you know, people would just say, well, I didn't know what to make of it at the time, but I wasn't scared. In fact, it was very peaceful. In fact, it seemed to come at just the right time I needed it. And again, that started me down this road of really what's going on here? Just what are we really talking about? So as I started to research this, and as I, you know, purposefully, you know, wanted to seek out people who had these experiences, just because, you know, I wanted to know more, because I had similar experiences myself. And I started to discover that people just don't have one particular kind of after-death communication. It would certainly be, they would have multiple accounts of an after-death communication. As I said, some people would have dreams and a vision. Or some people would have a vision and they would smell the perfume or a cologne of a loved one. Or they might see an indigenous animal, or not indigenous animal, I should say, and have a dream of their loved one. And these wouldn't occur all at once. They would be spread out. But, definitely the same loved one would reach out, or they would experience their loved one in different manners. But the message or the result was always the same. And that was, I just want to remind you, I'm okay, I'm healed, I'm happy, I'm peaceful, I'm content. And really, for me, I wanted to examine kind of like the outcome of, you know, what happens when a person experiences, you know, this kind of phenomena. Like, what does that do? And so I started, you know, as I was listening to people share these stories, I always wanted to relate it to, so how does this help you work through your loss and grief? I mean, did these encounters help people make sense of their loss? Was there a larger purpose behind them? Did these after-death communication experiences help people of faith? Did these after-death communication experiences help people who did not have faith? Was the after-death communication the evidence needed to prove that now, finally, we can point to something and say, yes, there is a heaven? Or was this a way for the loved one to have closure for what they needed? Did the person who experienced the after-death communication need that extra assurance or that reassurance that their loved one was okay and healed, forgiven, and whole? And if that's the case, why doesn't everybody who experiences the loss of a loved one receive these at one time or another. Because these experiences feel like a real gift of God's grace in the moment and right at the moment that they occur. So why doesn't everybody experience these? Well, when you think about it, regardless of when a loved one dies, again, no one is ever fully ready to say goodbye all at once. Even if our loved one is struggling with a very slow, progressive illness, and we see and we sense their impending death, and there is nothing we can do to stop it. At best, we keep the person comfortable, but we know sooner or later they will be taking their final breath. And the finality of witnessing them take their final breath brings their death right to the forefront of our hearts and in our minds. And in those incidences, we like to think that, well, I've had a chance to say everything I wanted to say. You know, I just have nothing else to say to that person, and vice versa. We've talked it all out. But how often do we, at some point later, struggle with some aspect of our relationship with them? Or we might say, oh, if I only had another hour, then I would be able to tell them this. Or if we only had one more week, that would have been great. Or, oh, I wish they would have held on through the holidays, or something like that. And there's always something, I wouldn't say left over, but there's always something for us to continue working on, because one of my favorite quotes comes from Tuesdays with Maury, and he says, death ends a life, not a relationship. And to be quite honest, there's also going to be those times when a death of a loved one comes without warning, and we don't have time to say goodbye. And we feel as though we don't have that closure with them, and maybe they didn't have any closure with us. And in this sense, a loved one who is reaching out, you know, to us through an after-death communication can be the means where we find forgiveness. Or it could be the means by which we find peace. Or it could be the means by which we find assurance that, yeah, right, everything is going to be okay. I just needed to hear that. See, I've learned that after-death communication can be experienced at any time because it doesn't depend upon us, but rather it depends on what is needed at the time. I knew a little girl. Her name is Megan, and she was only 9 years old when she died from an AIDS-related illness. Her death was particularly troubling for all who watched her die, especially her doctors. I mean, we were all right there. And Megan had contracted the AIDS virus from her mother when she was still in her womb. And from day one, her body had fought this uphill battle against this relentless disease. And while she and her family emotionally fought against a relentless social stigma, I mean, this was back in the day when you did not openly talk about AIDS. And for some people, it didn't matter how you contracted it because there was such a stigma of, oh, you're one of those kinds of people. Well, 4 months after her death, and let me back up a little bit, but I was asked by the family to do her funeral. And, you know, I said, of course. And if you've ever been to the funeral of a little boy or a little girl, it is standing room only. The places, you know, the funeral homes or the churches or synagogues, wherever the service is held, the place is packed. Because it seems as though entire communities come out because it's as if they've lost one of their own. And in a sense, they have. They're very much grieving not only the presence, but they're also grieving the future. You know, what she would have been like when she grew up. Would she have chosen to remain single? or would she want to get married and have lots of kids? And what career path would she wanted to take, or what talents and gifts and graces had she yet to discover? And so forth and so forth. So it was a very, very difficult funeral to get through. And I do have to say that I know plenty of funeral directors, and they are a breed unto themselves. I'll just put it that way, where, you know, whenever I would meet with them to go over whatever, you know, the service plans and so forth, they would always take me into the back room and show me the latest model of whatever casket or whatever, you know. And like I said, they're just a strange breed in and of themselves. But I have yet to meet a funeral director who gets that excited about seeing a child's casket. They may deal with death and dying every day, and funerals and services and, you know, memorial services. They do not want to deal with the death of a child. And so it was just a very, you know, solemn, somber service. A lot of tears, a lot of heartbreak. And I had met the family, talked to them before and so forth. And it was just, you know, after we were at the cemetery, and we just stood around for a while, and nobody really wanted to go to the reception. It was just that painful of a reminder, because we didn't really have, oh, wasn't it great when she did this? Or, you know, we just didn't have those lived experience stories yet, because she was only nine. And she had, and we had all said that she had so much of her life yet to live. But it was about 4 months after her death that her grandfather frantically called me from his hospital room, and he asked me, you know, to come see him that day. And I, you know, first thing that ran through my mind was I expected that he had received some bad news regarding his health, that he got some test back, and then it's just like, this isn't what I was ready for, or something, or that he needed surgery, you know. But he was just, you could tell in his voice, he was quite shaken up. And so I told him that I would be at the hospital within the hour. And when I arrived, he was actually sitting up in his bed, but he had this worried look on his face. And he looks at me and he goes, "Now, Dr. Houck." And in the meantime, I was just trying to pull up a chair just to sit beside him. He said, "Now, Dr. Houck, please don't think I'm crazy. Don't you dare call me crazy. But I need you to tell me, you know, I need to tell you something that happened to me last night." And he went on to tell me that he was awakened from a deep sleep. And he said, "I was out. I was in a deep sleep." Somewhere around 2 o'clock, and bam, he was just wide awake. And he sat up in his bed and he saw Megan sitting at the foot of his bed, dressed in her white nightgown. It was clean. It was shiny. She was healthy. She was strong. And he said that she turned to me, gave me a little smile, a little wave, and then she disappeared. And he spent the rest of the night trying to make sense out of what he had just seen. And he said, "Now, tell me I'm crazy." And I said, "Well, first of all, I'm not going to say that to you. You're not crazy." But I went on to explain to him that I think what you received was a very precious gift, a reassurance that Megan was safe and free from disease and pain. And perhaps the reason why Megan came to him was that his last memory of her would not be what he saw in the hospital room. You know, a frail skeleton of a girl clinging to life. And I also explained, you know, to him, her grandfather, that other people have also had these, you know, similar experiences. I didn't use the word after-death communication, but similar experiences that really helped them come to terms with their losses. And through this simple permission giving and normalizing and a little education, Megan's grandfather was able to rise above his family's stigma of AIDS that society had imposed upon him and them for such a long time. Well, This is why I say that after-death communication can be such a gift for us. I know there are people out there who would report that after-death communication, or when their loved one showed up, it was something so unnerving. It was horrible. It just, they don't want to remember it. But I would say 90-ish percent of people who receive after-death communications have been very pleased. It was as if they needed to hear from their loved one, or they needed to see their loved one more time. And again, it's not up to us. It's not like we get together with a bunch of friends and hold hands and start, you know, calling out to heaven and say, give us a sign, give us a sign. It's not that at all. But when our loved ones show up, it's very spontaneous. It's people can receive more than one after-death communication. It's very peaceful. It's very reassuring. It's very, let's just say it helps people work through their grief. It helps to remind them that, yes, you know, I now see you as healthy or whole, or I know that you're okay, and therefore my last memory of you is not looking at you in the casket or trying to say goodbye to you when you were in the hospital room or something. But it really provides people with a nice closure. And as I said, just, you know, one time is not going to do it. It's just sometimes people get multiple, you know, experiences like this. And so, when I presented this paper at this conference, this is what I brought out. This is what I shared. And as I said, there were a lot of experts in the room that I found out later. And was relieved that they agreed, that they said, you know, yep, absolutely, this is what's occurring out there. And it doesn't matter, you know, where we are. It's not exclusive to people of the United States, and it's not exclusive to just women or men. It's not exclusive to just kids. But it occurs to anyone who needs that little bit of reassurance, who needs that little bit of healing, who needs to be reminded that, yes, there will come a time, as it says in the book of Revelation, that when God will wipe away every tear from our eyes, and that there will be no more sickness, no more pain, no more suffering, no more death, no more dying. All those things will pass away because, behold, all things become new. And it's just a wonderful reassurance, and this is why I call it a gift that is, you know, just it comes to us and just reminds us of these very precious promises. And a person never forgets whenever they've had an after-death communication. It's just something that's very real to them. In fact, they don't even have to write it down. They can just tell it verbatim almost. You know, it's that powerful. So I invite you to, you know, share your stories with one another, or maybe even next week calling in. Again, would love to hear from you, love to hear your story and so forth, because I truly believe that the world needs to hear more about these stories, because, again, Hollywood has been out there and trying to capture after-death communication, this phenomena, for some time. But after-death communication goes back, you know, as long as we can remember, you know, as far like centuries and centuries and centuries. In fact, if you want to, you know, think about it in this term, you know, those of you who are fans of Shakespeare, you will remember that, you know, the opening scene in Hamlet was when, you know, the guards were there and they were, on watch. And Hamlet's grandfather shows up. He was a ghost, as they put it. And, Hamlet didn't believe it at first. So he says, okay, I'll tell you what, I'll stand watch with you tomorrow night just to see. And there was Hamlet's father again as a ghost, you know, and just simply, very quiet. But over time, you know, Hamlet's father showed him how he died, and by whose hands, how he died, it, and actually uncovered a lot of dishonesty and murder that was going on in the castle. Well, yeah, okay, that's Shakespeare, okay? But, you know, that phenomena had to have been known at that time, the days of Shakespeare, for him to write about it. And we even have movies such as Dragonfly, if you've ever seen that. It's an early, early Kevin Costner movie, which his wife dies and she shows up in the image of a dragonfly. And I won't tell you the whole story. You're going to watch the movie yourself, but actually needs him to do something. And so, again, we have those stories out there. And even, you know, A Christmas Carol, you know, one of the classic favorites every year at Christmas time, you know, old Ebenezer Scrooge is visited by Jacob Marley, who is just bound by chains. And he's given this stern warning of mend your ways or you're going to be like me. And these chains were forged in my life and now I'm cursed to wear them. And, you know, that message of, you know, look, this is a warning, so you better pay attention. Well, after-death communication, in a true sense, doesn't necessarily follow that analogy, okay? Because, you know, I have yet to find the people who would tell me that they received a warning or they received some information, you know, very specific to them. But it's more of a, you know, very peaceful experience, you know, and this could come, you know, in a dream that is so real that you could swear that you could reach out and touch the person. Or there are times when you heard your voice, you know, where you heard their voice calling out to you, and they just said, hey, so and so, or they just spoke your name and there was nobody around. Or there was a time, like say, when an animal would show up that was like, oh yeah, that was his favorite or something, and you never see that animal again, you know, or smelling perfume or cologne, which is kind of my favorite way. I just really like stop and pay attention because something happened here, you know, in the moment kind of thing. Or, you know, other ways where, you know, maybe through the telephone or something where you just hear your name being called and then the line would go dead or something. Okay. Everybody's experience is a little bit different, but yet in that diversity, there's this common thread of, so what does this do for us in terms of our working through our grief issues? And it really helps us come to terms with the relationships that we have with our loved ones, you know, and reminds us that if we need to keep working on those relationships, if we need to find forgiveness, or if there's ever a moment when we need to say something, you know, later on perhaps of, you know, I am sorry, please forgive me, I forgive you, thank you for loving me, thank you for being there, and ultimately I love you, you know, hearkening back to last month's or maybe a couple of months ago, that broadcast on saying the four things that matter the most. You know, perfect opportunity to share those moments and even to write those things down, if you know, to have the words and then just turn that into a simple prayer. So after-death communication has been around for however far back we can go. And looking at this, stories have been told, stories have been, you know, woven around them, books have been written, movies have been shown. But ultimately, we need to examine, you know, what does it do for us in terms of how does it help us? Because there is an element of healing in all after-death communication. It is indeed a gift. It is a joy. There is a peace. There is a sense of forgiveness. There is a sense of assurance and reassurance that although death ends a life, it does not end the relationship. We are always connected with, to, and through our loved ones. We are connected by that blood-soul connection that we have with them. And after-death communication reminds us of that. So My name is Dr. James Houck. You've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. And part two of this subject we'll be taking a look at next week, 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Time, next Friday, August 14th. Do take care. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio.